Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Dr. Miriam Korick, and I've teamed up with Optometry Times to bring to you a new podcast called the You and I Podcast. We're going to be going over updates, research studies, latest up-and-coming technology in our field, and I'll also be interviewing expert guests in future episodes. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Dr. Miriam Korick. Today we have an exciting topic that I feel isn't often discussed as much, and that is huge advancements in technology in the field of low vision. Now, I know for a lot of us ODs, it seems that low vision was always super specialized, and although there is truth to that, there really has been a lot of technology out there that can help our patients with AMD, glaucoma, and other sight-limiting disorders that we should be able to properly refer and know about when we have the right candidate in our chair, and also know about what options exist in terms of smartphone apps that really improve the quality of life to some of our patients who may ask us if there's anything out there that can help them function better with their limited sight. This is where keeping up to date is super important for primary care optometrists, as we are often our patient's first resource. So I'm not a low vision specialist, but I'm going to be talking to someone who is. I would like to introduce my guest, Dr. Patrick Yoshinaga, who is the professor in chief of the Low Vision Rehabilitation Service at the Southern California College of Optometry at Marshall B. Ketchum University. So Dr. Yoshinaga, if you can please introduce yourself and tell listeners about your background in low vision.
Well, thank you, Dr. Korick, for that kind introduction and for having me here today. I'm glad to be here. I graduated from SCCO quite many years ago, and I had an opportunity to work in solo private practice for a number of years. In addition, I was able to work at the USC Doheny Eye Institute for 16 years, where we primarily fit medically necessary contact lenses on patients with corneal diseases, but we also developed a low vision service there. So when I returned to SCCO, I later joined the Low Vision Service, and I had the opportunity to coordinate one of our fourth-year outreach clinics at the State of Nevada Bureau for Services to the Blind and Visually Impaired, otherwise known as the Las Vegas Low Vision Clinic. And this is really a wonderful clinic. It offers a great teaching experience to our students to provide them the opportunity to provide care to visually impaired residents of Nevada through the State Department of Rehabilitation. And then for the past 10 years, I've served as chief of the low vision service at SCCO.
How would you define low vision? What diagnostic tools are used during the low vision evaluation?
Well, in low vision, we can think of it as reduced vision or visual fields that really impair the ability for someone to perform daily activities. But the key is that these reduction in fields or vision are not able to be corrected by the traditional means that we have, such as glasses, contact lenses, medications, or surgery. So we have a lot of diagnostic tools, you know, to treat ocular disease. Of course, we have a lot of imaging techniques. We have OCTs, fundus photography, perimetry, electrophysiology. Fundus autofluorescence is one that we use quite a bit in low vision because it really highlights the areas of the retina that aren't functioning properly and the other parts that are. And from a low vision standpoint, we have a whole array of devices. We take a very thorough case history because it's important to know how long the vision loss has been going on, at what point the patient is into their acceptance of their vision loss, whether it's new vision loss or longstanding. We have spectral prescriptions, prismatic corrections, a whole array of optical devices like magnifiers, telescopes, as well as filters to help with glare or contrast, and field enhancing devices. And in addition, there's a lot of adaptive technology, electronic technology in the form of CCTVs, which are tabletop mounted devices that can magnify text. There's portable versions, handheld video magnifiers, and more recently, a whole array of apps and software and headborne devices.
Wow, that's awesome. That's a lot of stuff that I feel like primary care optometrists don't have in their own clinic. So it's nice to know that we have this resource to refer to. Which brings me to my next question. Who are the best candidates for referral to low vision? And how do I know when to refer to low vision versus OT or vice versa?
Well, there's all types of patients that struggle with vision loss. They come from all ages and backgrounds and unique circumstances with regards to their vision loss. But we can probably break them down into three basic categories. So the first are those that have hereditary or congenital conditions. things like retinitis pigmentosa, albinism, coloboma, microphthalmos, just to name a few. These patients, of course, are typically younger because oftentimes they're born with their condition or they develop them early on in life. The next category would be those that have had normal vision but unfortunately have suffered trauma, which has left them with reduced vision. And then the last category would be those who are typically our older patients. They've had most likely normal vision throughout life, but now are experiencing vision loss due to diseases that are associated with age, typically things like macular degeneration, glaucoma, and diabetes. But anybody who's struggling with vision, even whether it be the patient or their family members, it would be a good idea to at least go over what options are available for these patients.
Right, and see if they're motivated to do it.
Right, definitely.
And managing low vision patients is often a collaborative effort. Can you elaborate on who are the members of the care team and what are their roles?
Well, we're very fortunate to have a great team at SCCO. Larissa is our administrative assistant, and she does a wonderful job establishing a rapport with our patients and our referring providers from the start, and this lasts for years. She also is involved in working with the laboratories and keeping track of the orders, so she's really our main contact with the outside world, basically. Our faculty includes Dr. Rochelle Lin, who teaches our low vision course to our third-year students, and she's developed our genetic testing program. Dr. Ashley Deemer brings a wealth of experience from her years at providing low vision care at Johns Hopkins University, and her interests are in geriatric care and head-mounted devices or head-borne devices. The other area, we've been very fortunate to have the services of our two adaptive technologists, Mitch and Wayne, and they've had years of experience working with the visually impaired community. You know, they work very closely with our patients, not only reviewing technology, but they also help them explaining resources that may be available to them for everyday living. And what's unique about both Mitch and Wayne is they're both visually impaired from retinitis pigmentosa. So this really offers a personal perspective from their experiences, from their vision loss, their struggles, and their successes. And we really see the patients appreciating their input. There's a bond that's created between them, and it really helps provide our patients hope and the realization that of the possibilities of continuing a full life even with their visual impairment.
Right, because the patients can be like, well, I'm going through that too. So them being part of the care team and helping them and saying, this is what worked for me, this is what I'm experiencing, really makes the patients feel seen and heard.
Like I said, we're really fortunate to have them.
And you mentioned technology a lot, and technology has advanced significantly in the last few years. How has low vision treatment evolved in the past 10 to 15 years?
Well, typically in the past, we typically had optical magnifiers. Those were simple magnifiers, telescopes, high-powered glasses. But more recently, over the past several decades, obviously electronic magnification has been introduced, such as CCTVs and handheld video magnifiers. And just like our computers, they're getting smaller and smaller with flat panel screens, and so they're not so bulky. But more recently, we've had the opportunity to use these apps that are really amazing because they offer a whole array of other options. So there are apps that are compatible with our traditional smart devices, our smartphones, our tablets, our computers. And it's amazing how many patients already have smartphones, even our older patients. And in these apps, they can provide a lot of different assistance. For example, you can use an app on a phone to take a picture and it'll describe the scene. It'll tell you that it's a room with a table to the right, a couch to the left. There's a male about the age of 30 sitting on the couch and a female standing next to them at about the age of 20. So describe scenes for those who have severe vision loss. It can identify items like books and telephones and things like that where you might be searching for a particular item. It can also give you more information about products. So if you're at a store and you want to find out more information about a product, you can scan the barcode and it'll give you all the information on the product. It can recognize people, family members, work associates, help identify color, help identify currency for those who have difficulty with that, and help with navigation. And almost all of them have text-to-speech technology, or what we call optical character recognition, where you can scan a document, it'll read it aloud to you, or you can quickly just scan a sign and it'll tell you where the bus stop is or where the restrooms are. So one of the main advantages of these apps in particular is that many of them are at very low cost, and some of them are actually free. So that's really been a plus for our patients.
Would you be able to let us know what some of these apps are, just so I can recommend them to my patients? Yeah, if you could drop a few names, that would be awesome.
Sure. Probably the most two popular apps that we use are the Seeing AI app and the Envision AI app. And the Seeing AI app and Envision AI app could be put on your smartphone or your tablet. It does all those things that we just talked about. But in addition, they've incorporated artificial intelligence into these devices. So, for example, if you had an app that could read text to you, and you wanted to go to a restaurant and find out what the vegetarian items are, you could scan that menu and it would read the whole menu to you, but you'd have to remember what it said. But through artificial intelligence, instead of scanning the whole document and reading it to you, you just ask the program, what are the vegetarian options? And then the device scans it, and through artificial intelligence, it figures out what the vegetarian items are. And then it comes back to you and says, there's three vegetarian items, a soup, a salad, and an entree. And the person who's talking to you is actually it's an artificial intelligence voice. It's not a human. So it's really become advanced. Instead of having to scan a document and wait and then distinguish what you want to pick, you can just ask it just like you're asking another human being.
That's so cool. I feel like that would actually even be quicker than a seeing person looking on the menu and scanning
Sometimes.
it themselves for
Right.
vegetarian options. So now the low vision person can even do the task quicker than a normal seeing person.
Yeah,
That's
it's amazing. And
amazing.
I guess it does take a little getting used to talking to a computer voice, not a human.
Yeah, but that's really cool. That's what I was thinking as you were describing that. What kind of trends are you seeing in low vision? Like in the recognition of low vision treatment, and how are these trends having an impact on how you treat low vision patients?
Some of the exciting trends that have been occurring over the past several years is the greater awareness of vision rehabilitation services and the use of devices for patients who have loss of vision. So the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office of Disease Prevention and Health Promotion has developed their Healthy People Initiative, and this has been going on for decades, and it's really an initiative to improve the health of individuals throughout our country through a set of measurable objectives. And this extends to all areas of health. So they're measurable objectives that are looked at every decade. So there's the Healthy People 2010 initiative, Healthy People 2020. We're currently in the Healthy People 2030 initiative, looking at the things we can improve in the decade of 2020 to 2030. But in particular, they have specific objectives to recommend the increase in the use of low vision rehabilitation services, as well as the use of assistive devices for those who have vision loss. And the key here is that this is actually a public health initiative. It's an important step to increase the awareness of vision rehab services, as well as the use of devices, not just to the eye care community, but to the overall healthcare community as well. So it really puts a spotlight on the need for vision rehab services. Because of this, we're seeing earlier referrals, and that's been helpful because it's been shown that earlier referrals to introduction to low vision care, as well as devices, is very helpful to patients, as opposed to waiting till it's end stage AMD or end stage glaucoma. This way, the patients can get more engaged with the devices and understand their resources. So, should their vision progressively get worse, they're already at least comfortable with some of the care that's available. Another area, of course, is the readily available technology that we talked about regarding the apps and the programs that are available. And one last area is there's an area of research called telerehabilitation. And this allows us to reach out to patients in their homes. So we know that low vision patients really struggle with transportation. They can't just hop in the car and come down to our offices for multiple visits. They have to arrange a ride. It can be an ordeal for them. So this allows us to assess the patients in their home environments through a secured video feed. And hopefully, we can improve their skills and usage of the devices in their own environment so they can enjoy the maximum benefits from them.
Right, so help them move around their home where they're and get them more comfortable. Like
Right.
sometimes they have to be home alone. It's good that they can navigate and use the devices to help them navigate. And I also liked what you said about the early intervention, getting them used to the devices before their vision progresses, because then they can kind of make adjustments and modifications with how they use each device to help them.
One of the main
Go
concerns
ahead.
is that We would sometimes give a device to a patient in the office and they'd be really happy, but then they'd go home and maybe forget how to use it, maybe not hold it correctly, have the lighting incorrect, and then maybe get frustrated and not use the device. So by doing these telerehabilitation visits, we can hopefully make sure that in their own environment, we can give them tips on how to use it more efficiently.
Right, that's awesome. You could have it almost as a follow-up, a telemedicine visit, to be like, hey, remember we did this in clinic? Let's apply it to how you live your life at home as well. We talked about artificial intelligence with reading the menu, but how have developments in augmented reality technologies benefited low vision patients?
Yeah, augmented reality is kind of a new area in vision correction. There's one particular device made by Ocutrex. It's called the Oculens Augmented Extended Reality Headset. And I do have to say that I am on the medical advisory board for this particular company. But they're using a new technology that's never been used before to try to help patients with central vision loss. We are looking forward to its release soon, but the concept works by using a different form of treatment for central vision loss, typically that caused by macular degeneration. So it does so by manipulating the pixels that would normally fall on the blind spot area from the macular degeneration and repositioning them to fall with very high contrast images into the surrounding retina that's still viable. And this is, again, a new technology. Instead of just typically magnifying, we're actually changing the perception of the picture to move it into areas that work more efficiently. This is done through custom mapping, through imaging from either images from their fundus autofluorescence or from their OCTs. And it's an individualized treatment. So everybody can have a different size or shape scotoma. So it's individualized for that particular patient's condition. And the other thing is it can be updated if the scotoma enlarges or the condition progresses. So it's brand new technology. It's a new approach to assisting those with central vision loss. And we're really very excited to see how this new innovative technique may help our patients with central loss, typically with AMD.
That's awesome. So is it a headset? Is it glasses? What is
Yeah.
it that they're, how are they using it?
It's a very lightweight headset. It's very similar for our doctors out there for the as to the binocular indirect ophthalmoscopes that they wear. So it's well balanced. It's lightweight, and it's the newest prototype has made a lot of improvements on the weight and usability of the device.
That's awesome. Are there any other augmented reality or just other technology devices that you recommend or that help patients?
So one company that uses artificial intelligence and high technology is Orcam. And Orcam has the Orcam 3. It's a very small device. It's handheld, fits in the palm of your hand. It can be controlled through voice commands where you can ask it to look at things. You can use hand gestures to point at things, or you can just use the buttons that are on the device. Again, because it's so small, you can take it out and about when you're on the go doing errands. It could be mounted to a stand so that you can use it in your home, and it can magnify to any screen so that you can see the image on a screen and you can change the color and contrast and also connect it to Wi-Fi. The other one is the Orcam MyEye, and this is a wearable device that fits on the temples of your glasses. It has the capability of doing the things that some of the other apps have. It can be voice activated. You can point to the text. It'll read text to you. It could read a sign. It could read a document. Recognize faces of people you know, such as family members or work associates. It can help with color identification, money identification, and even give you more information about products through barcode reading. And it does it in real time. So it's a wearable device, and the input is through a speaker on the side of the temple right by your ear.
That's so cool. So it's basically on the actual glasses in real time. So you don't have to take out your phone. And with the speaker hooked to the ear, I'm assuming that other people around you aren't disturbed or can hear it. It's something that's privately only you can hear when you're wearing it.
Right. It does have that capability since it's spectacle mounted where you can wear it and you don't have to point a phone at everything. And again, it's fairly well, you can hear it through your earpiece, but it's not very loud so others can't hear it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So a lot of low vision patients, especially if they're very early on in their diagnosis, they might still be working. Do you have any recommendations for accessibility features on patients' computers?
There's quite a bit of built-in accessibility programs that can scan documents and read to you. They can change the size of the cursor to make it bigger, make it easier to find. They can change the fonts, the color, the contrast. Many of them have text-to-speech capability where it'll scan a document and read it to you. And then they have the opposite where you can, through your speech, dictate something where it'll print it out on a document for you. So there's quite a bit of advances in all the operating systems, whether it's an Android or an Apple product or a Windows product. And these are all in the accessibility function menu when you look for it on your operating system. The tricky part is showing patients how to access those, but most of them are already built in into their computers.
Wow, with all this technology, how do you decide which device or technology to prescribe to a patient? Like, what are you taking under consideration? Is it severity of vision loss, patient's age, comorbidities, lifestyle, the product's ease of use, cost? What do you analyze when making a recommendation?
Right, pretty much all those things that you said. Of course, certainly the type and severity of vision loss, whether it's central vision loss or peripheral vision loss. So for our patients with central vision loss, they typically do not have problems with mobility. They can walk fine because their peripheral vision is intact. Where they have difficulty is recognizing faces and reading small text. On the other hand, on the opposite side of the spectrum, we have patients with fairly good central vision, but almost completely no peripheral vision. And those patients really need assistance with mobility. They may need a white cane or a guide dog in some cases. Others are bothered by severe glare or problems with glare or reduced contrast. And of course, you could have other comorbidities like arthritis or things that may make it difficult to use certain devices. So we take that into consideration. One area that we really concentrate on are the visual goals expressed by the patient. So we really don't want patients to come in thinking that we're going to give them this magic device that's going to make them see like they used to. We'd rather just ask them, are there any specific tasks that you're struggling with currently? And if so, how can we address those? And then if they become more proficient, we can expand onto other types of goals that they might have. Certainly, patient dexterity is an issue. Some devices require more dexterity. And if they do have problems with dexterity, we may have to choose something that is more simple, maybe a stand-mounted device where they don't have to hold it. The intended use of the device, whether they're going to be using it at work or school, outdoors, or only in the home. There's a lot of portable devices that are much smaller, or we can use a larger device if they're just planning on using it in the home. And of course, the last thing is the ease of use. We all have different capabilities or ability to use electronic devices. So some people are not as tech savvy, so we try to make it a little bit more simple. But I would have to say many of our older patients are perfectly fine using high technology like smartphones and tablets. And of course, the last thing is cost, and that can always be a barrier sometimes in obtaining devices.
Right. I like how that you said when you do the low vision exam, you actually ask the patients, what are your visual goals? What is the specific task that I can help you to achieve? I think that's really good to keep it goal oriented because it also sets expectation.
Right, it is. We just want to take it in a little steps at a time. So if they can maybe now read the bingo sheet at their weekly church event, then that's a plus, and then we can move on to something else as they master each task.
Right. I like that. Like just putting that in as the chief complaint of their exam. We're going to focus on this one thing.
Right.
That's also really helpful because just being in a primary care optometry clinic where I see all types of patients, if I see someone that's a good candidate of low vision, whether it's something congenital or from a disease, and they express to me, hey, I can't do this one thing anymore that I really love to do, that's good to know that someone can help them focus on this one particular task.
Right. I think it gets overwhelming if a patient just comes in and says, I really like to do everything I could before when my vision was normal. That's sometimes just too much to kind of attack at one time. So we try to take it step by step with the patients.
Right. Speaking of cost, because you briefly mentioned that, do any insurances offer benefits for low vision services or devices to patients?
Well, that's one of the barriers. There's not a lot of insurances that cover devices. For our older patients, Medicare does not provide any coverage for devices. Some Medicaid programs will cover basic devices, and they use the term basic. So that would typically mean a hand magnifier, maybe a telescope, but not like a CCTV or things like that. The real area or the real source that we get assistance from in covering the more expensive devices are from the Department of Rehabilitation, from our state affiliates. So every state has a Department of Rehabilitation. They usually categorize patients who go there to ask for assistance because of vision loss into two categories. One is what's called vocational rehab, and that's for any patient who is still going to school to try to get a career so they can remain independent or is trying to continue to work. In vocational rehab, there's quite a bit of funding that they will provide things to help patients remain independent, things like CCTVs or some of the high-end devices. Some states have a second category. They're called different things in different states. In California, it's called the Homemakers Program, and that's typically for individuals who are no longer working but just need help with everyday activities, reading the newspaper, doing recreational things. Unfortunately, a lot of those types of, well, for example, in California, the Homemakers Program has been suspended because of lack of funding.
How would the patients apply to these programs?
When we tell a patient about the Department of Rehab, they have to take the initiative to go to their nearest Department of Rehab office and schedule an appointment to be interviewed. They're interviewed to find out what their difficulties are, and if they're deemed eligible, they become what are called a client. They don't call them patients at the Department of Rehab. They're a client. They're assigned a case manager. The case manager goes all over all the things that they need, makes the appropriate referrals, gets all the reports back, and then makes the decision as what the state could provide, what type of assistance the state could provide. But basically, the person has to go to their nearest Department of Rehab office and open up a case or try to open up a case through an interview.
When a patient has an open case, if I'm a primary care optometrist, would I be one of the, I guess, checkoffs on the checkoff list for something the patient needs to do, like at a standard eye exam?
In some cases, if it's deemed that it's maybe just an eye exam, like they need contacts or glasses, a primary care optometrist may get a referral from the Department of Rehab. For low vision, I think it's more done through more low vision centers that have the resources to provide overall complete low vision care. And I think you have to apply to be a low vision provider through the Department of Rehab.
I feel like low vision care has sometimes been misunderstood or not given as much of a focus on in optometry. What is one takeaway about low vision that you would like to express to other optometrists who aren't in this specialty?
Well, low vision care does take time. There's a lot of chair time that's involved. So that, I guess, one of the things that is a concern. I mean, in many busy practices, some practitioners wonder how they can incorporate that into their practice. But I think the main thing is, even if you choose not to do low vision in your practice, that's perfectly fine. But as long as you know what type of resources, what type of devices are out there and can make the appropriate referrals, that's fine. That would be fine. And again, it's important to make those referrals early on when the patient's starting to lose their vision, as opposed to waiting till when they can't see anything else anymore and they have geographic atrophy and the AMD is completely scarred over. Although, as a private practitioner, a general practitioner, primary care practitioner in optometry, most docs could provide basic low vision care like magnifiers, telescopes, and things like that. And if the case is more complex, that requires more things like assistive technology, then maybe a referral to a low vision center or to a low vision specialist would be in order. The other thing we want to make sure that practitioners know is that really it's a team approach. Of course, we're concerned with vision, but we want to have collaboration with other agencies. So in Southern California, we work with the Braille Institute. They provide things like computer training, help with activities of daily living, to do things around the house like cooking and cleaning, grooming themselves. They have talking books libraries. They have support groups. We also work with driver rehab specialists for those who are still able to drive. We want to make sure that they're safe. So they have excellent programs. St. Jude's is the closest one to us in Southern California. And the other thing is orientation and mobility specialists that can really make sure our patients are safe walking out in the neighborhood by themselves or in their backyards. Braille Institute offers that also. So it's really a team approach. Of course, we're concerned with vision, but we're really concerned with the patient's overall well-being.
Wow, that's so awesome to hear that there's so many different aspects of it and so many different team members. Is there a nationwide kind of like website that I can go to see where are the low vision centers by me? Where are all these resources by me if I'm not located in California?
There are many advocacy groups for low vision. There's Foundation Fighting Blindness. There's the American Council for the Blind. There's the Envision organization that promotes low vision education. So there's major organizations that have listings of the various low vision agencies. And again, like in Southern California, we use the Braille Institute. But Braille Institute is not located across the country. Other parts of the country use agencies such as Lighthouse. We don't have Lighthouse in Southern California, but they kind of do the same thing. And there are listings with directories to get that type of information.
That's really awesome to hear that there's so many resources out there for all those patients.
And a lot of times in our practices, we come across, it's not necessarily for the patient. We may be examining a patient in the office, and they may bring up something about their relative who's at home that's struggling, or a friend or an acquaintance. And sometimes just talking to them about those types of options, they're very excited to give those, their friends that information to maybe seek care for things that they weren't aware of.
Right, and that gets care to those patients who thought, oh, well, maybe I shouldn't go to a regular primary care optometrist for some reason. So it's good to talk to the patients, let them know, hey, these options exist. If you know anyone who is struggling with their vision, we can also help them. We can help them get linked up with all these different resources. One thing that you did mention, you said that we can even prescribe, magnifiers. What's a good website or source for optometrists to get these devices for patients?
There's many major companies that provide magnifiers. I think one of the best ways to do it is when you actually go to a national meeting like the Academy of Optometry or AOA. Typically, they'll have exhibits with the major suppliers of these devices. And I think if you're looking to, get a bit of devices in your office, it's better to go to the meeting and ask for a bulk set of magnifiers as opposed to ordering them individually. So, for example, if you need some hand magnifiers, instead of just going on a website and ordering three, you can go to a meeting or call them. You don't have to, it doesn't have to be in a meeting, but you can go and call them and say, I'm thinking of providing low vision care to my patients. I'd like a set of magnifiers ranging from 3x to 10x. Can we get a set at a reduced cost? And most of the vendors are certainly willing to help you out with that.
Yeah, I'll definitely be on the lookout for that next time I'm at the meetings.
Yeah, it's amazing. There's quite a few vendors that are available with their low vision products at these various meetings.
That's awesome.
One of the areas I just forgot to mention is that, we talk about the vision corrections that we provide to our patients, but a big area of our service is basically counseling our patients as well as their families as to the resources available to them. So again, some patients are struggling with other things, just struggling to accept their vision loss. There are support groups through the Braille Institute that have been very helpful to meet with others who have the same type of situations. Again, we talked about orientation and mobility. There is help with people that can come to the house to make sure things, just simple things that we take for granted, like cleaning and cooking and grooming, are able to be done efficiently. Home safety environments, agencies can come out to the home to make sure there's no tripping hazards, that the lighting is good, that the appliances that they use frequently, the common settings can be marked to make them easier to use. Transportation is another issue. Our patients struggle with transportation. Most of them cannot drive. Some even have difficulty taking public transportation. So there are agencies like Access Paratransit that we can help patients sign up for. We can refer patients to state rehabilitation agencies. Many of them are not aware of those benefits that are available to them. Even financial assistance, we can help patients referring them to Social Security Administration to get financial assistance. There's job training and then there's driver rehab. So again, it's much more than just the vision correction. We just want to be, we basically want to know, we want to let the patients know what all their resources are. And if they're ready to accept them, then they can go out and do them. If they're not, they might want to think about it for a year and maybe come back next year and pursue them. But we just want to let them know what's out there. I think some of the anxiety that our patients experience is that they come in thinking that there's some special device out there that they're missing out on. And if they, that there's something special that they're missing out on, but as once we show them their options, then they can make their decisions as what's appropriate for them.
Right, because I think it's really important to be aware of kind of like the emotional aspect of it in terms of vision loss, especially if someone had normal vision their whole life and then they became a low vision patient due to some trauma or disease. A lot of them have to almost process it first and accept it before they seek out help and resources. So it's just something to take into consideration when we're seeing patients day to day.
Yeah, it does. It is. I mean, we have patients that we think, wow, we got a device that really helps them see better, but their comment is, well, I don't want to use it. I'd rather use my old glasses. And then maybe next year they come back and they say, okay, maybe I'll try this device. So, like you said, people have they're at various stages with their acceptance to their vision loss, and that plays a role in when they're ready to try some of these devices or resources.
Right. Is there anything else that you would like to add or any questions that I didn't ask?
No, I don't think so. I mean, again, we've been very fortunate to have a great team at SCCO. It's very encouraging to see earlier referrals and a greater awareness of low vision, and all the possibilities that are available to help patients with reduced vision.
Well, thank you so much for Dr. Yoshinaga for providing us with your insight and knowledge about low vision. And I think everyone listening will be able to take away at least one new thing about low vision and how it can really change a patient's life. I feel like I see this topic in a new light now, and I'll really be able to better analyze which of my patients warrant that referral if they're motivated. And I also learned about the apps and accessibility features that I can quickly show my patients if they ask me if there's anything readily accessible to them and cost-effective that can help. This was really fun talking with you, and it was super informative and helpful. So thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me.